These programs also frequently contain disinformation in order to give others a reason to disregard the fact that beings are coming to Earth from other planets. Presenting information in this manner can help those who cannot deal with the truth adjust slowly to the fact that alien visitors are coming to Earth. In other words, those who are afraid of the truth are given an opportunity to stay in denial of this truth until they are ready to adjust to the facts in the case. There you have it, in an abbreviated form. The cornerstone of the government position is to deny the truth and exercise the strategies of decoy, destruction and trash. Never admit to the truth. Whenever possible, introduce additional information that will confuse anyone interested in the phenomena. Make things up. For example, simply say the event didn't happen. The witness could not have been with the ETs, he was at the movies. The witness was visiting relatives. The witness is delusional. It doesn't matter that none of these statements is true. People who are not experienced with how they are being manipulated will be so confused about the other alternatives to the courtroom evidence supplied by the witness that they will simply go on about their daily activities as if the story they were told were not true. Remember, the key to success for the government is to ignore courtroom type evidence. Clearly, beings from other planets are coming to Earth. Some are here to visit, in other words, they are tourists. Some are here as scientists, to study our civilization. Some are here to help us. They work among us to help us invent things that they know we will find useful. They are helping us to absorb technology at a pace that is comfortable for our civilization. They are helping us to become a sustainable civilization. They want us to one day join their Galactic Federation. Several years ago, I had the privilege of spending a year taking a course in miracles from a minister of the Unity Church. I learned a number of important lessons in this course, but one of the most important was that there are universal truths. The mere fact that we do not know or understand something does not change the facts in the case. Beings similar to us are coming to Earth and are among us. Your decision to believe that this statement is not true will not change the fact that they are here and have been for a very long time. Lyle Michel 217, The Keepers, supporting comments from another planet. But I cannot claim to know who was piloting it or who built it, either. It didn't look like any craft known to me at that time or at any time since then. My second sighting of a craft of unknown origin occurred in February, 2001, in Las Vegas, Nevada. For about 3 to 5 minutes I observed an enormous black triangular-shaped ship pass through the dark night sky, drifting silently and slowly only about 200 feet above me, from the northwest to the southeast. Perhaps this was a new style of blimp. I just don't know what it was, but there were lights all across its leading edge, and it seemed very much controlled by some intelligence. It appeared large enough to carry thousands of people. At the very least, it filled me with wonder. Jim Sparks has had more odd experiences than anyone I've ever known. Whether these events are in fact real or not is debatable. They certainly seem real to him, and I am in no position to argue with him. The fact is that Jim's outlook on life is also very different from anyone else's that I've come across in my lifetime. The events he's described have led him to a most unusual understanding of motivations and intentions of a multitude of people, both human and non-human. They have left him with a philosophy that is so profound, in my opinion, that I am inclined to believe what Jim tells me, even though it sounds impossible. I'll give you an example of what I mean. One evening Jim and I and two other people had been to a show in Las Vegas. Afterwards, Jim and I took our leave from the other couple and went to a small cafe where we purchased some shrimp cocktails. There were perhaps 15 or 20 other people in this cafe, and Jim and I were deeply engrossed in conversation about his paranormal experiences and their residual effects on him, which is a topic that fascinates me. From what began as typical white noise, the murmuring of the crowd, there emerged a single raucous voice from a nondescript woman who was approaching the buffet line behind our table. This intrusion escalated into more and more of a scene as her voice grew louder. I was not mindful of the content of her utterances, since Jim's comments merited my full attention. I now became annoyed when this patron's behavior interrupted my concentration. Jim's words captivated me, but at last I felt compelled to turn around and see what the ruckus was all about. The woman appeared to be trembling as if she didn't have full control of 219. Nancy Smoot, it is doubtful that anything I could say or write would change someone else's mind about the existence of ET life. It would take a personal experience to do that. Personal experience is a great eradicator of doubt. Jim Sparks and I, along with countless others, have had personal experiences that have banished whatever doubt our belief systems may have held with regard to the possibility of non-human intelligent life. Whether the inhabitants dwell in other realms, dimensions, times, or planets, the home base of these beings is not so much what's in question, it's their very existence that seems to be the topic of debate. When sightings, visions, abductions, inexplicable malfunctions or residual effects, and numerous other paranormal activities have become part of one's personal experience, then one's belief system is changed, whether one desires such change or not. Your inability to accept my statements of what has happened to me will not change my conviction of their authenticity. Subsequent information that crosses my path may color my interpretation of an event's meaning, but it will not cause me to deny that it took place. Personal experience causes one's beliefs to evolve into one's knowledge. At this time in my life, I personally acknowledge that there is a power greater than human power. How this power is manifested in human experience varies from person to person, and by what name this power is known also may vary from person to person. Events labeled synchronicities, chance occurrences that seem to have significant meaning, by one person may be called miracles by another. Someone else may think of it as satanic activity. Much of our belief is based on perspective. And no two people have the exact same perspective of any event, due to the fact that no two people have ever had or will ever have the same set of experiences. Also, experience is colored by an individual's attitude, and attitudes are developed by experience. When I was 9, I had a prolonged sighting of a silver spaceship-looking craft that rotated in small circles as it rotated in larger circles. This took place at dusk near Scottsdale, Arizona, in February of 1963. With three other teenagers, I observed this low-flying craft, about a third of a mile away, for about 10 minutes, and then it eventually flew behind a nearby mountain. I cannot state definitively that it was 218, the keeper's her body. At that very moment, she focused her eyes on me and made a disturbingly stunning comment which was directly related to the esoteric statement that Jim had just made privately to me. This woman, a stranger, was about 12 to 15 feet away from us and could not possibly have overheard our conversation. What was even more bizarre was the fact that everyone else in the room became motionless, as if they were frozen in time. They weren't staring at us or paying attention to Jim, me, or this woman. They just stopped in midstream from whatever activity they were doing at the time, as if they were caught in a freeze frame on a video. A startling silence suddenly overtook this cafe for several seconds as this woman's eyes met mine. When I turned around to Jim to ask, "What was that?" the room and the woman resumed normal activity with the typical sounds of a cafe. No one else seemed aware of what had taken place, not even the woman who had made the statement. Jim's response to my question was, "If you're going to hang around with me, you'd better get used to things like this. They happen to me all the time." In my mind, if this unbelievable experience truly is typical of what Jim often has to deal with, then I think he's handling his phenomenon very well. Jim is a gifted individual whose abilities have raised my consciousness by expanding my concept of reality and by opening my mind to seriously consider the existence of other dimensions and those who inhabit them. Nancy Smoot, supporting comments after that sighting, "My life proceeded along the usual path taken by many abductees. Poltergeist and strange electrical activity suddenly became the norm around the house, and intense, virtual reality dreams and out-of-body experiences held me hostage night after night. My family, friends, and I witnessed countless additional sightings. Unmarked black helicopters began buzzing my workplace, my home and the homes of my parents and close friends. On two occasions, A strange black sedan pulled up in my driveway when no one was at home, and four men dressed all in black entered without invitation. My neighbor, who watched them with curiosity both times, commented later that calling the police, somehow, just hadn't occurred to him. I underwent hypnosis and experienced little more than the typical abductee stuff, the fear and panic of being taken, the commonly reported procedures, and worse, the intense pain of separation from family and friends. In the spring of 2000, I attended the annual Midwest UFO conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Many of my friends were excited about seeing a guy named Jim Sparks speak. I personally had never heard of him, but after watching him hold the audience captive and spellbound for an hour and a half, I knew I would never forget him. I was recovering from recent knee surgery, and later that same night I hobbled on my crutches into the Lone Star Bar, a converted hotel room that some wealthy Texas oil men rent out every year to entertain the speakers and guests. I saw a small group plow through the door, and, seeing Jim among them, I shouted over the noise, "Oh, you poor baby." Truly, I had been very touched by all his extraordinary traumas over the years. He politely acknowledged the comment with a gentle smile and continued on his way, vanishing into the crowd. He reappeared a little later, as I was struggling to fix myself a drink, a bit difficult to do when you're on crutches. I soon realized that I was standing, innocently, on the threshold of a doorway to what I came to refer to as Jim's world. He and I instantly became inseparable for the duration of the conference, and since then we have been very close. Anita L. Albright. One long ago, cold night in October of 1994, Pandora's box cracked itself wide open in my life with the appearance of a football field-sized, black triangular ship that hovered silently over me in my driveway. At the time I had felt quite knowledgeable and well-read in the field of ufology, having just spent the previous 6 years going to UFO conferences and devouring every book and movie on the subject, despite the objections and dismay of my own children and entire family. I had officially gone off the deep end in their estimation. 220, 221. The keepers. I awoke the Tuesday following the conference with the burning images of a virtual reality dream. I was standing on a ship, as an adult, watching myself as an infant, maybe 3 months old, being laid, only inches apart, next to another infant, on a large, flat, stainless steel-like protrusion from the floor. I was experiencing simultaneously both the adult and infant perspectives. My infant self turned and locked eyes with the other infant, whom I instantly knew was Jim. Jim and I have been pulled from the brink of death on many occasions, seemingly by someone or something that manages to keep us both alive. On numerous occasions, he has left me in a state of absolute shock with disclosures from his otherworldly friends, exacting, intimate things about me that he, living thousands of miles away, could not have possibly known. High strangeness follows him and anyone who dares to get close to him. With Jim I have seen firsthand, amazing sightings of ships, and he and I have been pulled together many times. Such occasions, though, are merely mundane in Jim's world, which is complex, with layer upon layer upon layer waiting for discovery. It is a rabbit's hole, with seemingly no end. Jim has given me every reason to reconsider any and all of my previous belief systems. He has given me every reason to believe that things are not as they may appear. If he is delusional, then I too suffer from that very same delusion. I believe him. Anita L. Albright, supporting comments. Jim said that he had found that his many years of alien encounters had enhanced his psychic awareness. Stronger telepathic ability, both in words and visions, seems to be a residual effect of such encounters. He can also feel the energies surrounding the aliens. The energies of the taller supervisor types were sometimes overpowering, much stronger than the energies projected by the worker bins. When Sparks was working as a waiter in Florida, he felt a strange compulsion to apply for a similar job at a very ritzy country club, and so he did. A year later he was hired and trained. He worked in a tuxedo and served many very wealthy people. Some of the events he worked were in private mansions with hundreds of guests. The profound event occurred at a 1998 fundraising event at the Country Club for a children's hospital, with 800 attending. While waiting at the bar counter to have an order filled, Jim got a psychic impression of a VIP arriving with several accompanying security guards. As the group came into the building, Jim could feel the familiar energy of a supervisor-type alien getting stronger. He heard a strong telepathic message to support the children's hospital, and he was certain others received the same message. The man entered the room rapidly, followed by his security team. He looked like a supervisor-type alien, about 5'10", large cranium, oval black eyes, thin chin and light skin. People turned to watch him. Most people thought it was a human in a mask, but some seemed to recognize his energy and sought his blessing as he passed. His body was lean and graceful, and he walked like the aliens Jim had seen on the ships. He walked straight to Jim and touched him on the shoulder, whereupon Jim was thanked telepathically for being a teacher about humans and their emotions. He told me that he felt that this was a reward for his participating in their encounter programs. He quit his job that night, knowing that setting up this encounter with a powerful alien in our society is why he had felt compelled to work there. This seems to be one case of an alien choosing the right time and place to mingle with humans in our third density society. I wonder how often this mingling of species occurs. Donald D. Ware, Donald D. Ware. After Jim Sparks drew a record crowd for his lecture, The Star People, at the Unlimited Horizons meeting in Navarre, Florida on January 13, 2002, Jim spoke to me personally about one of his most profound alien encounters. He was a bit nervous about talking about it publicly, so he waited until we were on the way home in the car before he related it to me. I feel this encounter is important information for truthseekers. It is a case of aliens among us. 222-223, symbols Linda Moulton House and my alien symbol conversions to Mario Pasaglini, Ph.D., who earned his Master of Science degree in clinical psychology from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. simultaneously. He worked in a double program on his doctoral degree in sensory neural physiology and abnormal psychology from the University of Delaware in Newark. Dr. Pasaglini has studied many symbols provided by people in the human abduction syndrome since the 1980s, including some from Betty Andrea's son Luca. He agreed to study my version of the alleged non-human symbols and numbers and to provide his professional assessment, which is reported here in full. Assessment of alleged non-human symbols and classes 2 and 3 above. Its later iteration as combinations of symbols looks in general like group 3, usually seen in abductee cases. Oddly, it is in this second iteration that dots become combined with cursive forms to produce the final script. Combining the images from Mr. Sparks's narrative, there are really four levels of variance of this script. A. First, there is the script which appears on a flat two-dimensional surface of paper. B. Secondly, that two-dimensional form is understood as three-dimensional because Mr. Sparks says that the symbol for A, which looks like a simple horizontal stroke, is actually three superimposed strokes of repeated motion on the same line. C. Thirdly, the simple alphabetic elements are combined into shorthand condensed forms. D. And fourth, the entire text of a script is condensed into one complex symbol with multiple layers of motion and meaning. This is clearly a very complex system, apparently relating somehow to the native alien script as used by the aliens themselves, and secondly to a system that would be teachable to humans. Mr. Sparks's symbols may not be the actual and purely alien script. He suggests himself that it is a common ground for communication between them and us. Several observations can be made in stages. Stage I, first impressions. A. This is an alphabetic script where one symbol equals one sound, just like our alphabet. B. The aliens have presented to Jim Sparks equivalents to human sounds and alphabet, which is an odd fact for a supposedly alien source. Even different Earth cultures with the same voice box produce different phonemes. Either this is made up or the aliens are tailoring a system to us humans. Numbers described in Jim Sparks's story by Maya Pia Zagel in I, Ph.D., Clinical Psychology and Sensory Neurophysiology. This sample of alien writing is interesting in that it lends itself to layers of analyses. Superficially, it appears to be rudimentary and perhaps purely human-generated. But, the Jim Sparks symbols also present unexpected facets. In form, this script falls between two general classes of alien writing. The classes referred to are of three types generated by a compilation and study of alien script, which I have collected over 15 years. These classes are: 1. Geometric forms, circles, squares, angles, triangles. 2. Dot and line forms, where symbols are made of various combinations of dots and lines. 3. Cursive, where the symbols look like Greg shorthand. Most alien writing from abductees seems to fall in the latter group and now represents the largest of the three groups of writing. The Sparks sample looks like an intermediary between 224, 225, the Keepers C. Some alien letters resemble their English alphabetic equivalents. For example, at this level of analysis, the possibility that this is actually an alien script is suspect. E. There are follows which are also found in Earth-based artificially made-up scripts. As the name implies, symbols in these made-up scripts tend to follow one another. For example, symbols less clear in the third and fourth iterations of the symbols when they are combined into a shorthand script. Those combined symbols of condensed cursive style script look very much like examples of script from other abductees. This in and of itself does not make them alien, but it is interesting that widely divergent sources, unaware of what other abductees have described, do write similar-looking script, such as Betty and recent Luca. These complex forms are not one-to-one letter-to-sound symbols. Their placement on the page is not linear, but produces a whole gestalt of meaning as described in the text. Perhaps the most provocative and unique aspect of Sparks's description is the requirement for three-dimensional projection in order for the script to be fully understood. Three-dimensional conceptualizing is rarely mentioned as a characteristic of other purported alien scripts. Historically, some so-called magical scripts, or sigils, also are said to require a three-dimensional conceptualizing. In a conversation with an assistant to Aleister Crowley, who was a member of the Order of the Golden Dawn and leader at the OTO Ordo Temporalis Orientalis, Order of the Eastern Temple, in the early to middle 20th century, it was mentioned that some portions of the Enochian chessboards used in the Enochian system of magic were to be seen in three dimensions. Aleister Crowley followed directions of Queen Elizabeth I's court astrologer, John Dee, who said he received the Enochian system from a luminous being. Crowley and Dee understood that three dimensions were necessary in order to visualize properly the symbols needed to contact otherworldly entities. There are other cases in which aliens have told their abductee contactee students that the alien script is multileveled. In one of the script samples, it was said that the script was to be read by passing a finger over it and that in this way thought will be produced equivalent to reading the script. Further, these particular entities said that different levels of meaning could be elicited upon repeated finger passes over the same script. 227. The fact that there are follows in the Jim Sparks's symbols raises additional questions about its alleged alien source. Is this made up by a human? Or alien? Or for a human-alien psyche interface of some type? Does the human mind add a note of rigidity to the process of forming an alphabet for communication? Why couldn't the aliens come up with clearer and more distinguishable symbols? Are those particular symbols necessary somehow to provide the aliens with the forms they need to perform subsequent operations with human minds? Jim Sparks's symbol for the letter R actually does resemble the ancient Greek letter rho, semicolon S looks like a type of Greek S, or C, sigma, semicolon B is mildly like a Greek beta. Are these accidents? In other alleged alien symbol communications I have studied, there are resemblances to early and classic Greek. So, in this first stage of impressions, one would suspect that this is a humanly produced, consciously or unconsciously, symbol system. It seems to share too many characteristics of pre-existing alphabets and doesn't look well-formed as a coherent system of well-defined alphabetic symbols. Stage 2, analyses of symbol shorthand. In its more complex form, the Sparx's script eliminates many of the above criticisms, and the first impressions become 226, the keepers. While we cannot definitely say that the Sparx script is alien, we can say that it does not follow the common characteristics of hoaxed or made-up scripts. It describes a complex system which could form a communication link between totally dissimilar minds, a link between ourselves and the other, human and alien. But nothing is clear in this elusive phenomenon. Stage 3, analysis of numbers, symbols space. Tenon said that its various shadows cast on a two-dimensional surface form the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. This is an odd number system for an advanced culture. First, there is no zero, which is an essential feature of a computational system. The Romans had a terrible time with their system for this reason. The Arabs and Mayans both had the concept of zero and were able to go quite far with computations. Therefore, 6 is an odd number to use as a base. It would be better to use 10, or 2 even as in a 0 and 1 binary system, or even 60 as the Babylonians had. Those systems again are more convenient for computations. The earth-based systems that use 12 or 6 by 2 as in the foot and inch are very complex to work with. Why would aliens use such an odd system? Numbers are numbers. Of course, it's clear we don't understand what the aliens are up to and don't know how they think. It's possible that their 6 base number system could relate to the 6 sides of a 3-dimensional cube with 0 at the center. 1 with 6 numbers or states, there are 66, 6 by 6 by 6 by 6 by 6 by 6, or 46,656 possible states using the cube mode if each number can be used more than once, or 6, 6 by 5 by 4 by 3 by 2 by 1, or 720. States if each number is used only once. 720 is to by 360, as in degrees in a circle. Stan Tenon of the Mayu Foundation in Sharon, Massachusetts, has produced a three-dimensional form that rotates in 1. Editor's note. A zero is only essential for a two-dimensional number system. Consider a three-dimensional dice-like system where zero is all snake eyes and every number is a unique permutation of dice faces, with one dice per numeric position. Lack of a zero does not constrain computation with an abacus, for example. The Mayu Project booklet states, Stan Tenon tracked the spiral of a tube torus out of the middle and took out the shape. He removed the minimum amount of matter to delineate the tube torus and placed it inside a three-dimensional tetrahedron. He found that by shining a light through it so that the shadow of that shape came out onto a two-dimensional surface, he could generate all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, exactly as they are written and in order. He also found that by changing the shape to a different position, he could project all the Greek letters. Then by changing the position again, he could configure all the Arabic letters. He did this simply by moving this particular shape to different positions inside a three-dimensional tetrahedron. There are actually 27 primary symmetrical positions inside a tetrahedron. 228, 229, Final and Future Thoughts by the publisher. It appears ever more likely that we exist in a multidimensional cosmos or multiverse. The cosmos, far from being an empty place of dead matter and energy, appears to be filled with beings, creatures, spirits, intelligences, gods, that have through the millennia been intimately involved with human existence. Dr. John E. Mack. One of the final acts in Dr. John E. Mack's courageous and memorable career was to write a sound endorsement of Jim Sparx's story, as related in this book. Dr. Mack, professor of psychology at the Harvard Medical School, was well known and deeply respected by those who knew him. Dr. Mack saw Jim's story as key to the unfoldment of the true story behind the ongoing alien presence on Earth. Jim Sparx's remarkable conscious memory recall of his interactions with apparently alien and future human visitors is sobering. The message is clear: our dear blue and white jewel of a planet is dying because of our own mismanagement. While our problems are clear enough, the solutions are not. Why was Jim taught this odd alien alphabet, with its three-dimensional aspects? Is there more to his story than meets the eye?